Hello, and welcome to the Purple Orange Podcast, where we shine a light on the stories of people with disability in our community. I'm your host, Belle Owen, and this is episode 4 in our series. This podcast was recorded on Kaurna land. More often than not, the stories that we hear about disability are from people who have a similar experience to our own. So it's so important that we understand that disability as an identity intersects with other identities, including coming from a culturally and linguistically diverse background. In order for the disability rights movement to move forward, we have to listen to people who have experiences other than our own so that we can understand the ways in which they experience oppression, exclusion, discrimination, and then work together to solve those problems, to change those barriers. In this episode, Esther Simbi shares her powerful journey with us of challenging disability stigma across cultures. Kerry Shear brings us the story.
After 19 years in a refugee camp, Esther and a mother sat down for their final interview for resettlement in Australia. Esther had a sister who was already living there.
When you get that immigration interview, it's like you win lottery. I was so happy. The thing is, you don't know if you will go through the interview or not.
Did you know Australia excluded refugees with disability from their resettlement program until 2012? Only on rare exceptions was a refugee with disability accepted. Esther's immigration interview was 2005.
My mom was so worried about the disability. My sister had told her some things that we might not succeed because I have a disability. And I knew it was going to be a problem. There were even neighbors of mine in the refugee camp. There was a girl that had intellectual disability. They applied to come to Australia and straight up was a no.
It didn't surprise her. She was no stranger to being rejected for disability, first in her birth country of Sudan, and then Uganda. Why would Australia be any different? And yet Esther still held hope.
The lady that interviewed us was Australian, white Australian woman that came there to interview us. She said that I would be a great asset, regardless of my disability, that I would contribute to the Australian society.
Esther found out she would be the lucky, rare exception.
I was mom's interpreter, so I looked at her mom and I said, "Mom," she said, "we are successful." And she's like, "Yeah, can you repeat that?" I said, "Yes." She said, "we are successful." She actually went down on her knees, said, "Thank you." She got up and ran outside with tears, screaming. And I followed my mom. We were crying. People thought that we lost the interview. That's why we were crying. But we were happy.
You can answer if you need.
Hello.
As Esther was telling me the story, someone rang from a university asking if Esther's organization, Zion Disability Services, could offer work experience to students.
So you're asking about placement opportunity. Yeah, we do. Can you send me an email? All right. Thank you. Bye.
And so here's Esther, just as the immigration officer predicted, giving back to Australian society. But to get here, it took a whole lot of work to shrug off her own culture's low view of people with disability.
How do you think disability is viewed in Australian culture?
In Australian culture? I think it's not perfect. People are struggling every single day because of people's attitudes, and inclusion is a big problem. Acceptance is a big problem. But in Australia is a little bit of acceptance. But in my culture, it's not like that. You're viewed as like a taboo, like something bad. When I was 4 and a bit years old, nearly 5 years old, when I contracted polio, and then I noticed that now I'm being treated differently. The same neighbor's children that we used to play with are now laughing at me. And yeah, From that time on, I realized that I am different, and being different is not accepted.
Motivated by fear, love, and a desire to protect, Esther's mom placed the first burden of low expectations upon her.
She didn't want me to go to school because she knew I was going to be bullied. And when I'm at school, because she would be at home, where will I go? Always when I'm crying, I come back to her. The second reason was that the school was very far. And she didn't think that I was going to be able to walk to school every single day. The third reason was that she didn't have money to pay for my school fees. And also the other thing was there was no point educating someone with disability. They're going to end up on the street begging anyway. So the money, the little money she has, was to train the children that did not have disability.
Esther desperately wanted to go to school. She spoke to her cousin, who was only in the first grade, and asked for her help.
So she said, okay, let's plan to escape then. And she came very early. She hid behind a tree, and then she waited and waited, and she saw my mom went to the farm. And then she came slowly, calling my name slowly. I said, yes, I'm ready, let's go.
They walked slowly to school, taking breaks as often as Esther needed.
When we arrived, the year one, students were already in class under a tree. So my cousin dragged me, come and sit next to me. So I sat next to her. She had a book and a pencil, but I had nothing. So I was writing on the dirt. So the teacher came and he checked like 1 plus 1 or how many they were. And he checked all my answers were correct. And he just did a big tick with his stick. And then he asked, who are you? What is your name?
And just like that, Esther was a student. Her cousin and her were thrilled with their success. But as they made their way home to face Esther's mother, their mood changed.
My cousin was like, she's going to beat both of us. You go. You go. And if there is a problem, let me know. So she walked with me closer to my house and she went back to her house. And when my mom saw me, she was like, where have you been all day? I said, I went to school. And she's like, so you were able to go to school and you come back? I said, yes. And I was so excited. I said, I got all my answers correct. And she's like, okay, so you want to go back to school? I said, yeah, I want to go back to school. And that was it. I continued going to school. There was no problem. She wasn't angry. She didn't give me any punishment, nothing.
Had you not gone to school at that age, mm-hmm. what do you think the effect would have been?
I would not have gone to school at all. I would have not been where I am today. But education has opened so many doors for me. And all thanks to my cousin who helped me make that possible.
Education has been Esther's gateway to everything. But her mother wasn't wrong in that she had a rough journey.
Disability in my culture and in most African cultures is perceived, is associated with something bad, evil. They believe that you're a curse, that your parents might have done something wrong in their previous life, and that's why they had a child or children with disability, and they believe that you're possessed by evil spirit.
Was there ever a time where you took that on board and believed that for yourself?
Yes, I did. I didn't believe that I was evil, but I believed that I would not make it in life. Because people were telling me nothing good will ever come out of me. People with disabilities should be sitting on the street and beg for food. When people constantly put ideas into your head, sooner or later you're going to make it your own. And you will live like that, thinking that's you.
While Esther was battling disability stigma, another battle was unfolding. Sudan descended into civil war, and her family fled.
I left Sudan when I was 7, and I spent 19 years in 3 different refugee camps in Uganda. My faith in God helped me get through that.
We aren't going to delve much into life in the refugee camp, but it was, of course, hard. And if you're interested to know more, Esther writes about it in detail in her first book, Beyond Calamity. What's important to share here is that Esther got to leave the refugee camp to go to school.
When I get out of the refugee camp to go to school, I can see light. When I go back to the refugee camp, there's no light.
She went on to finish primary school, high school, and then a diploma of social work, all while living in the camp.
Studying social work also opened up my thinking. So I started challenging those beliefs that because I have a disability, I can't make it in life. I don't know, something in me told me I was much more than being in that box that other people created for me.
It was with this newly formed self-acceptance and determination not to be limited by others any longer that Esther made the journey to her new home in Australia. After nearly 2 decades as a refugee, she was finally free. But shortly after arriving, she realized she was not free from her culture's view of disability. After a joyful reunion, Esther says her eldest sister insisted that she share a bank account with her and their mother. Esther says this was because they thought she can't do it on her own.
And I said, okay, so if we have a joint account, does that mean if I want anything, I can just withdraw money and buy whatever I want? She said, no, that account will be managed by mom. Mom will do everything. That was the moment I told my sister, no.
This led to a fallout that lasted years. After Esther had her first daughter, they reunited.
I never held any grudge against my sister. Everything she did was from a place of love. Culturally, on her own side, it was the right thing she did. It was her own way of protecting me, like financially and all of that. But I want to be independent. I want to do things by myself. And so when I said no, she felt really hurt. I wouldn't say I did the wrong thing. I did the right thing for me. Because if I didn't do that, I would not be as independent as I am today. I'm so grateful that we had that conflict and it's resolved. And now we can sit together and talk and, you know, tell each other secrets and all of that.
Do you think her view has changed on disability?
Yeah, I think so. Yeah, definitely. I think so. Because I've done all these things. And I think that has changed her own perception of disability.
So after standing up for herself, Esther thought she won't stand for others' limiting beliefs any longer. But turns out that she still had a few of her own to contend with. She was studying a Bachelor of Social Work. She kept missing classes because it took her so long to walk from one class to the next. When she complained to the uni, they organized a wheelchair for her. And it was incredible. She hadn't used one before. She was never late again. But she wasn't ready to embrace the wheelchair.
I was kind of hiding it. Most of the time I didn't want to go because of that stigma and shame. I was okay using the wheelchair at the university. And then when I go to my community, I struggled to walk. For me, if I was to go in the community back then, in my wheelchair, it was kind of confirming that I have a disability, I can't do anything.
The irony of this was that without the wheelchair, she was limited. But with it, the world was open.
I have to learn to know that my wheelchair is one of my strengths and it's actually nothing to be ashamed of. And I'm happy now. It's part of me. That was one reason why I started Zion Disability Services Incorporated, because I became aware so many people are living with a disability in culturally and linguistically diverse communities. They don't want to apply for disability support pension. They don't want to apply to the NDIS because of that stigma and shame. They don't want to be seen differently.
And so with Zion Disability Services, Esther aims to help individuals seek the support they need to live a good life, but also to educate migrant communities about disability.
I'm not saying people should abandon their cultures, but those practices, those cultural practices that are not fair, things like the stigma and shame. So I want to use my own experience that, look, here I am. I live with disability. There's actually nothing wrong. I live with disability. I went to the university. I graduated with 2 degrees, a bachelor degree, a master degree. And here I am doing these things in the community, contributing to the community, giving back. People look at the disability as a weakness. It's not. It's strength.
You can learn more about Esther's organization, Zion Disability Services, by visiting www.ziondisabilityservices.org.au. We want to hear more stories from people who might not often get to share their perspective. If you have a story you would like to share or you have feedback on this episode, be in touch. You can reach us on Facebook by emailing us at stories@purpleorange.org.au or by calling 08-8373-8388. Visit our website at purpleorange.org.au. Join us next time for the Purple Orange podcast, where we meet Lauren Spear, who has rebuilt her identity after acquiring a brain injury. I'm Belle Owen, and thanks for listening.